light out, everybody.
Hello! Welcome, one and all, to week two of the Radcast Halloween 2022. I am Count Julie, and Count Boris is over there somewhere.
And over here, Julie.
Great! Stay over there until I tell you to.
I tell you, friend.
And when I call for you, walk over here. Do not hover. Hover! That's why I said to walk, so I can hear you coming. You scared me. Now I'm going to have to make sure that frightened fart didn't turn into a startled shart. I'm not feeling any hot, wet sensations, so we should be good.
My sincerest apology, Yuri. I just wanted to make sure I heard what you said. I was just over there getting the information on this week's sponsor.
Yes. The sponsor I have to read for.
Correction, Yuri. We get to read for our wonderful sponsors.
I know what I said. Let's not pretend last week's read went well, or was normal. It isn't exactly a privilege to promote a ravioli rodeo. But seeing as the check from that place did not bounce, I suppose we should read... Sorry, we get to read for another sponsor.
That's the spirit. And speaking of bounce, I have the copy from this week's sponsor. It is for Jumping Jeans Trampoline in Blue Jean Emporium.
Oh boy, I'm just dying to know how they made those two concepts work. Well... here goes nothing. Don't walk, don't run, but jump, jump, jump on down to Jumpin' Jeans Trampoline and Blue Jean Emporium. Our jeans fit all sizes and shapes, from human beings to the King of the Apes. Pick out your favorite Levi Strauss and take a ride on our trampoline bounce house. Birthday parties for the kids will provide the cake and ice cream. Well, I was expecting them to continue the rhyming pattern, but okay. So if you're in the market for a cowboy cut or to bounce yourself out of a rut, then tighten your dungarees and jump for your dreams at Jeans at Highway 91, just left of the casino. You know, although it has strange and vague marketing, that actually wasn't too bad. Jeans sounds like a pretty good place to do some back-to-school shopping or have a children's birthday party. You know, I think I'm finally warming up to these local businesses.
That is excellent to hear, my friend. I knew if you gave these primos a chance, you'd enjoy yourself.
You are right, Boris. I don't even mind admitting that. This is cause for a celebration. I have two half cans of V8 in the fridge we can finish.
Huzzah!
Wonderful! You know, folks, Oh, this is interesting. There looks to be a flyer of some sort sticking to the Jumpin' Jean advertisement. Let me just peel this away. Oh, it's something else with Jumpin' Jean. What? Come on, Hoochie Mamas. Down to Jumpin' Jean's Gigolo House? What the hell? Give us a call, we'll do it all. Ladies call in, we'll slap some skin. Ring or no ring, we'll do our thing. Slam a jam a swinging hammer. That nice family establishment was a front for a dirty den of sin.
What is wrong, Yuri?
Boris, what is the meaning of this? The council has me reading for some gigolo place.
I don't understand, Yuri. What is the problem?
Do you know what a gigolo is?
I can't say that I do. Does it have something to do with gelatin of some kind?
Well... might depend on the customer, I guess, but no. Oh, Boris, even with as long as you've lived, you still have a lot of learning to do. I'd say lean into your naivete on this one and don't bother finding out.
Very well.
There's no way in good conscience I can promote this smut. I think the council thought they were sending advertising for a nice clothing and aerobic establishment, but instead sent out man-meat recruitment materials.
Shall I void the checks they made out to us?
Okay, let's not do anything crazy now. I think it's only fair they compensate me for having to read that slam-a-hammer line.
I will go inform the council about jumping jeans and see if we can screen any future sponsors.
Yes, you go do that. Anyway, let's switch gears and turn this negative into a positive. On this week's episode... Uh-oh. Did you Google gigolos, Boris? Was safe search off? Well, sometimes we have to learn things the hard way, folks. And no, that's not the sexual innuendo. While Boris scrubs his brain, let me tell you about this week's episode. Four teenagers experience unprecedented horrors when they are all attacked by a mutilated madman in the most vulnerable of places, their dreams. Can they evade the terrors of his razor-sharp glove, or is the only option to never sleep again? It is a Nightmare on Elm Street, this week on the Radcast Halloween.
Listen, Glenn, I know who he is.
Who?
The killer.
I know what you're on.
Whatever you do,
don't
fall asleep.
What are those, the hijinks those guys get themselves into?
It's just getting progressively more, lewd.
Lewd, yeah.
A bit more ribald, if you will.
Yeah, lewd, crude dudes don't sound like Boris and Yuli.
Maybe lewd, crude dudes is the next sponsor.
Okay.
Whatever that ends up being.
But you know who are some lewd crude dudes?
Us.
You and I. Us.
Let's touch fingers.
Yeah. Lewd crude dudes.
Lewd crude dudes.
We got another lewd crude dude. We'll get to hear him here in a second if he's okay with us calling him a lewd crude dude.
For sure.
Okay.
Hell
cool.
Yeah.
Another lewd crude dude. Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. Another week of Radcast Halloween. I am Steven, as always.
I am Matt, as always.
And we are excited because we are talking to Nightmare on Elm Street, which another kind of groundbreaking horror movie in the slasher genre.
Coming in hot this Radcast Halloween.
Paved the way for a lot of future movies and a lot of copycats.
Yep.
But just really set itself apart in that slasher boom that was the early to mid 80s.
One of the big three.
One of the big three,
80s horror.
Exactly. Last week we talked about Friday the 13th, the first entry in the series, which it was a series of movies that got progressively more ridiculous, but still fun.
Yeah.
Same thing with these movies. Freddy Krueger got progressively more, wild and crazy.
As he became
animated.
More popular, he became a cartoon character.
Yes, but nothing really wrong with that. But we're talking, I almost said Friday the 13th. We did that last week. Oops, upside your head.
Yeah, exactly. Living in the past.
Yes, sorry. But this week, again, we're talking Nightmare on Elm Street, and we'll also get to why it's also a very special episode here momentarily. But before all that, Matt, why don't you let everyone know where they can always find us, even in October.
Even in October, on social media, you can find us on Instagram. We are at The Radcast. Radcast is spelled with a K, and that's all one word, The Radcast. We got a cool new Halloween logo, thanks to Jeff Wright Designs.
Jeff Wright
always comes in clutch, gives us all of our stuff. We pitch ideas to him, and he just nails it.
Yep.
So, and you can also find us in any major podcast app, your Stitchers, your Spotify's, Apple Podcasts, everywhere, and wherever applicable. Or download, follow, all that stuff. And wherever it's available, please give us 5 stars, rate, review. In this wide net of podcasts, we can just stick out just a little bit. That'd be
just a little bit.
That'd be pretty neat. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, just a little bit to get clipped by an oncoming vehicle.
Exactly.
You know? Just like out of a driveway.
And they can look at our body at the autopsy and be like, I know those two.
Yeah. I hear them every week.
Yes. We're just laying there silent.
So let's not keep you waiting anymore. We have a very special guest with us. He did our Batman Forever episode with us all the way back in November of 2020.
Yeah.
That was remote. We had a great time, had a great discussion, but he's in the studio this week. Ladies and gentlemen, The great Tyler Crandall.
Tyler Crandall
is here.
Hello,
with us. Hello, Tyler.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
yeah. Of course.
Picture of beauty. thank you for
yeah,
making the trek out here.
Yes, thank you.
So we are excited because Tyler's been a friend of ours since high school, and we have those times where we catch up with one another. And a couple weeks ago was one of those times when we went to go see the great band Jimmy Eat World.
Great show.
And we had been planning on doing an episode with Tyler. We thought, well, let's just do a ramble. We can just talk about whatever. And when the three of us were talking at the show, and Tyler's like, yeah, man, can't wait to record. I'm like, do you like Halloween things? Because we were like, we have Halloween episodes coming up, and we want to have you on really soon.
Horror movies? You into horror movies?
Yeah. So he mentioned A Nightmare on Elm Street,
yep,
which you said I watched it last year.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I didn't really grow up watching horror movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided a couple years ago, I'm like, I need to watch more of these. I've never seen these, and Nightmare on Elm Street was one of the first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a great way to start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It really is. And it also, because as the listeners know, as you may not know, we didn't grow up with horror movies either. We were, like a lot of people, deathly afraid of horror movies. So actually one way we kind of built our comedic chops, if you will, and like making
horror
fun
movies.
Of things
yeah.
is, you know, making fun of horror movies so that they would be less scary.
Yeah, similar to the theme of this movie, something we're afraid of, we take the power away from it by cracking jokes.
Yeah, parody it. That's why it's good, like, if you're watching with a group of people, you know, and you can throw in a witty comment every now and then, and it really takes the sting out of it.
Yeah, you should have been over here earlier. We were just, it was like Mystery Science Theater in here.
and there are some laugh out loud moments in this movie in particular where you're like, that's scary, but it's also really funny.
some Wile E. Coyote stuff.
Yeah, that effect is not evergreen. I see the strings and all that stuff. I understand how this could have been terrifying back then, but also I don't.
Yeah.
So it's I totally get that for sure.
But especially in the last 10 years or so, we've gotten really into just really hate 80s horror. So to see what slashers were before this within that context and to see this movie and to see how it kind of changed things up a little bit and to see how really unique it was, you get a greater appreciation for it. But I mean, you watching it, you know, for the first time, I'm sure you still had that appreciation for it, though.
For sure, for sure. I think some of the things that stood out was, you know, a lot of days there's a lot of digital effects.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the practical effects in this movie, it really stands out and it's impressive, right?
Yeah.
Because visually these days we're just used to whatever happens on screen, it doesn't seem like it's as special.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you see those real practical effects, it really adds to the movie. And
absolutely.
Yeah, it's beautifully done.
Yeah, so. For sure. I kind of made that point on last week's episode is, granted, as dated as some of the effects look, the fact that there was ingenuity involved, they're like, how do we want to do this? And you had a team of people like, well, we can do this. And then if we do this, it's just like creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling Steven, like, it's so funny that such a complex art like CGI can seem like the lazy way out of something.
Right, and we know it's not, but...
Yeah.
But, and it takes a lot of skill to do that type of work.
Yeah.
But like you said, the creativity and the problem solving that goes into a practical effect.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple times in this movie where there's someone on the ceiling.
Yeah.
And you're like, how did they shoot that? Did they turn the camera upside down?
Yeah.
Or how'd they make that? And then there's the scene where she's, I think is it Nancy? The main
character? Nancy.
She's running up the stairs.
Yeah.
And she's like stepping in goo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like, what is that?
Yeah. It's cool because there's I was telling Tyler before we started recording, there's again, with the long documentary, last week I talked about a 7-hour documentary about the Friday the 13th series. There's a 4-hour documentary called Never Sleep Again, which is super interesting and engaging, and it's just cool.
Methamphetamine, Never Sleep Again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the working title.
You think that's why, like, in the 90s, meth had, like, a, you know, like a come up?
Yeah,
because people were like, oh, Friday the 13th.
Yes,
exactly. Nightmare on Elm Street, Never Sleep Again.
Yeah, exactly. Movies were still real to people. Yeah, it's still real to me, damn it.
Yes. I don't want to sleep through the 90s. Come on, even in the 90s, we knew the 90s would be something special.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no rose-colored glasses. It's like, man, I'm part of something special. it's cool. They interview, like, all the people that were involved with the movies and these effects artists. They're like... Well, and they almost do it like you look at it and you're like, God, how they do that? And you're like, oh, I just did this, and this. And it's like, oh yeah, that stare effect. It was just Bisquick. Yeah, we just let Bisquick sit for 30 minutes. Yeah. And it's like,
it becomes like tenacious and really tough to get through, but it gives the desired effect.
But the allure of practical effects is it's an actor interacting with something real.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like you can kind of, you know, there's a scene where the cool greaser dude, Rod, Freddie like hangs him in his jail cell and like the effect I was sitting there and I was like, what, today they would have CGI'd a blanket like tying itself. And really, I'm not saying it's an easy effect, but how they did it was they filmed it forward and then shot it or like edited it backwards. So it's like you can.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You can do that digitally because nothing's on really film anymore. Mm-hmm. It's all digital. That is a digital effect you could do like that. Like Freddy, when Nancy is sleeping and Freddy pushes his face against her wall, that's just a sheet. Mm-hmm. And it's Robert Englund.
And
lighting.
Right.
They did the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street and they CGI'd that
of
effect.
Course. Yeah,
I'm like, that's get a sheet and push someone's face against it. Yeah. It's just, it's like actually people interacting with an environment.
Yeah.
And when they do the effect, it can look silly. But a lot of times you're like, at least it's like there and they can work with it rather than an actor pretending something is there.
But I imagine at the time when people saw it in the 80s and there wasn't all this CGI technology, people were like, oh my God, how did they do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the thing with the movie is what makes it so unique is where you're dealing with things in the dream realm. So to make things look surreal, it's all this surreal imagery, whether it is, you know, kind of Freddy creeping into the real world. Like so when Freddy, before Nancy pulls him out when she dreams, you know, spoiler alert, everybody. We're going to assume you've all seen
this.
We're
going to spoil a lot of shit.
Do you want to give a synopsis real quick? Just overview of.
Yeah. So I'll give. So let's get into kind of our boilerplate stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so Friday. Nightmare on Elm Street.
I did it too.
Nightmare on Elm Street was released November 16th, 1984, directed by the great Wes Craven.
Mm-hmm. Wes Craven.
Starring Heather Langenkamp as Nancy Thompson, Amanda Weiss as Tina Gray, Jesu Garcia as Rod Lane, Johnny Depp as Glenn Lance.
John Depp.
Who?
He's introducing Johnny Depp as his title card.
Ah, yes.
John Saxon as Lieutenant Donald Thompson, Ronnie Blakely as Marge Thompson, so Nancy's parents.
Yeah, yeah.
And Robert Englund, the great Robert Englund, as Freddy Krueger, a box office of $25.6 million on a $1.8 million budget. We have a segment on the show that we started with our like shitty movie podcast.
Yeah.
Called What's on the VHS. Yeah. I pulled the VHS open to Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
94.
Yeah. Okay. Real quick, what was on the VHS of Wes Craven's New Nightmare? A promo for the New Nightmare soundtrack. So just the score. Coming soon to theaters, The Mangler. It's based on a Stephen King novel to where it's like this laundry press thing.
Okay.
I don't know. People fall in it and they get mangled.
The Mangler sounds like a wrestler from like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
like the Maniac.
Yes. Sometimes the maniacs, the voices in the head can't quiet.
I love you guys. You like my kids.
It's the squirrels in my head.
Rowdy Roddy Piper. Rest in peace.
Oh, man. Coming soon from New Line Home Video.
Like my kids.
Dumb and Dumber. Mm. So coming to video, Dumb and Dumber. Hoop Dreams. And finally, In the Mouth of Madness.
You know, you said Hoop Dreams. It reminded me. There is a...
These were the previews?
Yeah, those were the previews, yes.
There was,
no, hilarious. It's the episode. Good night, everybody.
There's an Insane Clown Posse documentary called Whoop Dreams.
It's about the gathering of the Juggalos.
Yeah, playing off of that.
Yeah, exactly. Brilliant play on words. You wouldn't think Juggalos had such big brains.
Well, right. Some of them may.
Some of them might be listening.
Don't want to stereotype
anybody. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to generalize Juggalos. Yeah, Welcome to generalizing Juggalos. Yes. On our first episode, don't generalize Juggalos. Back to you, Steve.
Thank you, Matt. So, A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
So, pretty much the movie is, it starts out with Tina, who we're led to believe is going to be the main character, a la like a Janet Leigh from Psycho, which is a trope used in a lot of these slasher movies.
Or like a Drew Barrymore later in Scream.
Wes
Craven.
10 years later or so.
Yeah, exactly. Wes Craven would really he would start a style, and mm-hmm. then after the style got stale, mm-hmm. he'd be like, I'm going to start something else. Like, yeah. it's like, oh, well, this thing that I started is now stale. He's the horror meister.
Yeah.
Horror exactly. meister horror.
Much to yeah. his chagrin, because he was like, you know, I don't want to keep making horror movies, mm-hmm. but, like, they were the ones giving yeah. him jobs.
Yeah.
So opens up with Tina. She's in the surreal atmosphere, and we can tell she's in, it's, you know, something's fishy.
Yeah.
Well, actually, technically, it opens inside of, like, a boiler room, and yeah. you see the fashioning of the famous Freddy glove. Yeah.
I will say the New Line Cinema logo yeah. is very, like, it's just flashy, and it just, I don't know. For me, it sets a pretty good aesthetic tone for the movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Comes in with that ominous, looming music, and yeah. that's a lot of the dream sequences. There's this ominous, looming yeah. presence. Like, we don't yeah. see a lot of Freddy and, like, and in the light, it's yeah. a lot of done like in darkness, in shadow yeah. with certain lighting. And he's pretty much chasing Tina throughout this dreamscape, as yeah. we would see. But then before she gets killed, she pops up out of yeah. a nightmare. And
that's the theme with yeah. the four teenagers.
Yeah. So
they're all having the same
yeah,
dreams.
She meets yeah. up, and essentially she meets yeah. up with her friends, and who are our main cast. And they all are hinting they had the same dream, one of them being Nancy, her best friend,
yeah.
who ends up being the actual main character right. when Tina gets killed in mm-hmm. a really violent but inventive way.
Yeah.
Like, the way that they did that is they just were...
They had a literal rotating room. Set. Like, yeah. like, they built the set, and it's a rotating room. It's literally guys, like, it's like a couple guys on each side rotating the actual room.
Oh, yeah.
And the camera operator sitting in, like, an airplane seat, like, mm-hmm. nailed to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a genius effect.
Yeah, because that, in that yeah. scene, she's going up the walls and in the ceiling as she's yeah. bleeding out.
Yeah.
But essentially, her boyfriend, Rod, is yeah. blamed for the murder.
These deaths are mysterious.
Yeah.
And, like, slowly Nancy is, like, connecting the dots, and she's like, we're all having the same dream. All these people are dying, but there's really no explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're revealed, like, Freddy Krueger. What's the connection? You know,
the parents are kind of flipping about it. They don't believe yeah. her.
Like, what? Like, it's frustrating because mm-hmm. you're like, why won't they believe her? Like, it seems far fetched, but, like, even a little bit, like, I do believe you, honey. It's just mm-hmm. it's hard to prove kind of yeah. thing. They're just like, it's just get some sleep. Yeah. It's whatever. It's
the biggest thing is don't fall asleep.
Yeah.
And then near, you know, the end of the mm-hmm. movie shows the empowerment of, I don't give this fear power yeah. anymore,
but
when
Freddy,
she turns her back yeah. on yeah. Freddy.
Freddy was this child killer that the courts let him off. It was something like someone signed the wrong place in a search warrant.
Yeah.
And then basically the parents became vigilantes and went mm-hmm. and burned his mm-hmm. whole house down.
Yeah.
So in this act of love to protect their kids, they're actually inadvertently causing their deaths,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's that guilt with that
almost
as well.
Almost a repaying evil with evil sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, throw gasoline on someone and light them on fire. It's kind of dark.
Yeah,
a little bit.
But so is, you know, murdering children.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like
exactly.
take the good with the bad, or the bad with the bad, or whatever. It's like, kind of pick your poison. Hopefully yeah. you pick burning someone over killing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So that's essentially the movie. And what's great is Wes Craven also wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, like, layers to the story.
That's what I appreciate. I'm big on small details, and not just small details, but, like, thought put into small details. And, like, again, back to Never Sleep Again, which is an excellent documentary. It's on YouTube for free.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have 4 hours, go check it out.
Yeah.
But it's even down to Freddy's sweater. He's like, it's red and green because I was reading something that said the human eye finds those colors together very unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, that's genius.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
just something to where someone in wardrobe could have been like, here's a sweater. It's like, oh, cool. He's like, no, there's got to be a purpose behind, mm-hmm. like, everything
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. When you watch this, Tyler, mm-hmm. now you said earlier you didn't grow up watching horror movies,
right?
And that was because, was it lack of interest, or consider, you know, kind of the household you grew up in? Because we all grew up pretty, like, Christian,
yeah,
or in, like, mm-hmm. Christian, or at least with some of those Christian bars on things.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it more that, or was it just you just weren't interested?
Oh, I think it's a combination of that. Mainly, though, I would have been terrified.
Sure,
I would have pissed my pants if I would have watched this movie when I was 12, 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, like, the first horror movie I saw was The Haunting with Liam Neeson and Owen Wilson. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. It's not terrible. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oh,
this place is haunted. Wow.
And then it was The Ring, and that was the one where I didn't see
Lord of the Ring?
Like, no.
Oh, okay.
No.
That is kind of scary. The orcs are kind of scary.
You know, The Ring with the girl who comes out of the TV.
Ah, yes.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought someone came out of a TV in Lord of the Ring.
Yes.
Golem?
But there was always this curiosity with horror movies. Yeah, because it was kind of like, oh, well, we don't watch those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and I was like, well, what's going on with those? Because my friends would talk about them at school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, have you seen Freddy versus Jason? I'm like,
I remember that, yeah.
Who's that?
No. Yes.
what are those two things you just said?
I'm new here. It's my first day of school. Hey, new kid, you seen Freddy versus Jason? No. You ever play Grand Theft Auto San Andreas?
No.
I have no use for you.
Yeah.
But it's funny you bring up, like, because you said there was, like, this allure. Like, there's fascination. And that's a great way to put it, because I think it's so weird. Like, in the scary, people are just, like, drawn to scary things. People want to be scared for some reason, which doesn't sound appealing to me. I don't like being scared, which is why I would crack jokes during stuff.
Yeah.
But
it also goes to prove I'm not scared by the stuff we watch anymore.
Exactly. So. But, yeah, there is this fascination to horror. Probably, like, it's the it's, like, forbidden. And anything that's forbidden, regardless of what it is, there's still a bit of interest there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say we were very similar as well, to where it's, like, at least when we actually started opening ourselves up, start watching horror, we're like, what is the deal with all this stuff?
Yeah.
And it's so
And people love it.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of filmmakers use it as, like, analogs or illustrations for, like, social issues and stuff, especially, like, a George Romero, Wes Craven, stuff like that. So it's funny, like, through all the, like, mutilation in a lot of sense and violence, they're trying to give a message.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, all these killings was representative of big business or something, you know, something like that. Wall Street.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's the evolution of horror, really. Like, the 60s was kind of about, like, social commentary and, like, segregation, and the 70s was, like, the Vietnam War, 80s was greed and all that stuff. So I know a lot of people don't watch looking for, like, message and morality and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for people who do kind of catch on, they're like, oh, I guess I don't necessarily like to be scared, but this is a brilliant way to present this issue.
So. What was the first horror movie you saw where you got that, where it was like, oh, this is an art form, and I appreciate this?
Probably not necessarily for, like, social issues, but Halloween. The first Halloween, understanding.
I still need to see that one.
Oh, it's excellent.
And I haven't seen Friday the 13th either.
Ooh, oh, man. Well, all right.
Because I listened to the front half of the podcast, and you guys were like, oh, there's a twist at the end. Did you know the twist was coming? And I was like, oh, I got to turn this off.
Well, all right. But because
we kind of unabashedly and unabashedly just talk about
it. We just assume people have seen stuff.
No,
so,
but that's great.
But that's excellent that it's kind of aroused that interest.
But the first Halloween movie.
The first Halloween, because of, like, there's beauty and simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, up to that point, you just kind of retroactively, you kind of look back and realize that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But up to that point, I just kind of knew horror movies as, like, blood and guts and
the
boobs
things
and stuff
used
like
to
that.
Scare people.
Yeah. And I was like, what kind of messages can you really give? Not saying that Halloween gave a specific message, but just the simplicity of the score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't, Michael Myers is just, like, the shape. Like, he's hiding in the shadows.
Mm.
He's just, you see him briefly and he's gone. So you don't see a lot of, there's no blood in the movie, which is insane.
Hardly any blood.
Hardly any blood.
Yeah.
Insane considering it kind of started giving birth to the slasher genre. And it's crazy, like, what it would become. That's all it became about, was how creative can you make the kills.
Mm-hmm.
And it started in this simplistic way. It's almost more of a suspense movie than an actual horror movie. And then John Carpenter waits until, like, the third act, just from a storytelling perspective. He waits until the third act to really not only reveal Michael, but ramp everything up and be like, here's the threat. Here he is. You should be scared.
Yeah.
But also, like, the capable heroine and stuff like that. So I think Halloween was probably the first that it clicked to me that I'm like, oh, there's an art form to this. Yeah. That's just me, though.
Yeah. I wish I could put, because a lot of the time I'll revisit these things that like I was scared of when I was a kid.
Yeah.
After watching like behind the scenes stuff. So it's tough to get in a headspace of like seeing it cold.
Yeah.
But there was this flip of the switch in high school, like to where we finally got like satellite TV in our room. So AMC would have like the their horror monster fest or whatever. And we kind of just put on, oh, here's a Friday the 13th. Like we kind of just put it on and just something was just fun about it. Maybe it's just kind of like this scenario you're setting up for yourself. Like, or like I'm sitting down in my room on a Friday night watching Friday the 13th. And that kind of
it's October outside. Yeah,
that's kind of what builds around it. But one thing I would say and give credit to is what I watched for the first time and appreciated for what it was were the Universal horror movies.
Yeah.
You know, you watch Dracula and you notice there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of music. There really is no score because at the time they didn't make, you know, they're coming out of the silent era and a lot of movies didn't have talking on it. So they didn't know how to kind reconcile those two things together. But kind of this simplicity, you mentioned simplicity, but it kind of it's unnerving because you're so used to music underneath or just the gothic atmosphere imagery, and imagery and like set pieces. Yeah. So I would give a lot of credit to like first watching like the Universal movies.
That's kind of where we started with horror in elementary school because it's like, oh, these are very tame. Like they're not really scary like a Jason or Freddy or something like that.
I'll tell you what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know if in your school library or you would see these in whenever you'd go to the library, there were these orange books to where, and we talked about this on our Universal Movie Monsters episode with Jeremy Weed a couple years ago. And I the name escapes me on what they are,
I can't remember.
They essentially take like these horror classics or movies like The Exorcist and just kind of summarize the movie and the details of it. And we would read those.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of helped us like, oh, I'm never going to see The Thing. That looks scary.
Yeah. I'm not going to watch The Exorcist.
But I think reading
this
about
is an elementary school library, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like what the reading hell? About how they did things in Jaws.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I think it was kind of an early appreciation, but I was like, oh, I'll keep these at arm's length.
Yeah. Right.
So what about for you? Like, I know you mentioned the first ones you saw, but when did you start like appreciating what went into these movies, maybe culturally too?
Yeah. I tell you what. So in college,
mm-hmm.
I sat around with a group of guys and we watched Insidious.
Mm. Okay.
Which is a newer horror movie.
I've never seen.
Right.
It plays off, you know, I won't give too much away, but it kind of plays off this same idea of being in a dream.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's demons involved and paranormal.
Yeah.
Activity.
Yeah. You know, that's probably why I'm not into demons and that stuff.
Yeah. But it scared the shit out of me.
Right.
Yeah. For like 3 days, three or 4 days. Like at the time, it was definitely the scariest movie I'd ever seen.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And still to this day. But it's just like the unsettledness of it. And and there is something about watching a movie like that in a group of people.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of feed off their anxiety, sort of, or what makes...
Or you're kind of you're emboldened by it, too.
Sure, sure. Or, like, all jumping at the same time. How fun that
it's
is.
It's a shared experience.
It's a collective experience, like, I love seeing a scary movie in the theater.
Yeah.
I went to go see the movie X a couple months ago.
Oh, okay. I've heard of that.
Yeah, yeah. The premise of that one is, like, it's this group of people that are going to shoot a porno at some, like, farm or whatever.
Right.
Like,
keep going.
Yeah, it's like a 1970s sort of sort of vibe.
Yeah.
And so they're there and then like there's this old couple on the farm that you know wreaks havoc and
they make their own movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you could say that.
You don't want to watch any of them, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's not films.
And there's certainly mystery and a twist involved in it and everything. But watching that movie, in a room full of people, especially post COVID,
having
that shared experience, that collective experience, and me, you know, growing up within Christianity, within kind of a religious circle, but realizing that I could just watch a movie for entertainment,
and
not have to sit there and judge stuff,
exactly,
you know, and be like, oh, well, how should I think about this? How should I think about
that?
Instead, just letting that go and letting the movie kind of like wash over you, and you can experience the movie,
yeah.
so much fun.
Like, oh, yeah. Of course. And there's a different energy with like scary movies. I've never seen one in theaters, but that's why so many.
I saw Employee of the Month with Dane Cook.
Okay, that's
that was a little
movie.
Scary. Yeah,
but I saw Rebound when I was 13.
That's true.
When I was 14.
Martin Lawrence. Yeah.
But that's what made a lot of these. That's what made a lot of these slashers and just horror movies in general so popular is because the way you would see it, you'd hear about it word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot that weren't advertised.
Right.
But then like you'd hear it word of mouth and then you all go in to see it. You know, you see it by yourself. There's that energy there. You want to bring people back because there's an energy and an excitement to being scared as collectively as a group.
Exactly. It's, again, it's a fascination. It's like what's behind that forbidden door? Like we're all, when we're told we shouldn't indulge in something, there's that curiosity. Mm-hmm. Like it's just something in the brain. That's like when you're told not to do something, it makes you want to do it.
Yeah.
Regardless if there's something on the other side that's like, that's going to terrify me, but I have to know. Like I have to know kind of thing. Another thing, like these slashers, they get a bad rap, deservedly so in a lot of respects. But something that they, at least in the early days, that they would continue with, that they established and that they would establish as like part of the format is the strong, is the female heroine, like the last person to survive kind of thing. Like prior to that in movies, obviously they're the damsel in distress. They're just the wife that should be seen and not heard, like that kind of thing. But in these movies, it's a strong centered like, female character.
Yeah, why do you think that is too? Like culturally, why did that kind of come into vogue and why was that the narrative
prevailed? That's a great question. I think it
started probably as counterculture because a John Carpenter, let's look at Halloween, for instance. Laurie Strode, Jamie Lee Curtis, somebody who becomes this strong heroine.
Yeah.
John Carpenter was very much a social advocate.
Yeah.
Very much was into activism. And it would have been counterculture to make a woman who's generally seen as a damsel in distress as the one who prevails. I think the quote-unquote final girl.
I think there's a subversion of expectation in there, too. Like, that's part of horror movies is to throw you off.
Yeah.
Is to throw, especially these early ones, when you didn't have a lot of the tropes that we would get in later movies, is to surprise you, is to scare you, and part of scaring you is something that's not expected. But in this case, like a subversion of expectation, like when you watch and you see the male characters, you're like, I think I know what's going to happen. And then when they die and all that's left is like they spend a lot of time on the quote unquote like the virtuous kind of virgin female character. You know, Lori is babysitting while her friends are out having sex with each other and stuff.
That's a trope too.
Exactly.
In horror movies, like they play on that in Cabin in the Woods.
And there's a lot of those meta horror movies that like poke fun at that.
Oh yeah. And in this, I love the self-aware horror movies. Like ones that are kind of like winking at the camera. Yeah. As long as you're not like overboard with it, you know, like, okay, we're all in on the joke. Like, can you tell a story here? Especially in this movie, and I credit to Wes Craven, who's a bit more cerebral. There's an intelligence to him. He took the character of Nancy, and she starts as this kind of meek, reserved. Wes Craven said she looked like Heather Langenkamp, the actress, looked like the girl next door, like apple pie, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And she goes from that, she's slowly going crazy, and through, like, she could have just wilted under the pressure of it all and just fallen asleep and died like the rest of them. But there was this power.
Yeah, what'd she stay up for, like 7 days, they said?
I think so.
I haven't slept in 7 days.
Yeah, something crazy.
But it's okay, because the Guinness World Record's like 12.
Yeah, exactly. She said, she looked at the camera when she said that. It's okay, and she winked.
Yeah. And she's just chugging coffee.
Yeah, exactly. And then but it's so funny, because her mom's resolution is, just get some sleep. It's like, do you not understand?
She clearly doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's just, her mom's aloof. And it just shows that a lot of the characters...
And aloof.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And a lush.
Well, it's... So to kind of go back to, like, you know, Halloween establishing this thing that was very intentional, and then just in the vein of like where the female kind of archetype comes from.
Because Nancy gets stronger and she's like, I'm fed up with this shit. No one believes me. I'm going to do it myself. Yeah. And she becomes a lot stronger and more empowered. Exactly.
But there's a lot of the copycats probably didn't do it with intention. They did it because Halloween did it, or they did it because Friday the 13th did it. But then you get something like a Wes Craven coming along, or you get, other directors who kind of take that archetype and dive more into it. Nancy isn't just some, screaming, crying, although she's the final girl, they're still in these, in a lot of copycat slashers of like Friday the 13th and Halloween, they're still kind of cowering. And then they finally, out of desperation, have to do something. This one,
there was no progression. It's like we're doing it just to do it.
Nancy has depth. And finally, Nancy, she's coaxing Freddy out of her dream. And she's like, we're going to, I'm going to kick his ass essentially. And like, come on, Freddy, come get me. And she sets up all these booby traps.
Yeah. Kevin McAllister's it. Almost like Kevin Malone.
Did you ever expect that Freddy Krueger or any villain would be taken out by booby traps? And like, not comedically.
You know what's funny though about Freddy is that in a slightly endearing way, he's so derpy. Uncoordinated.
Yeah.
And that's really fun to watch because like he's flailing around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's almost scarier that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like he's giddy about like toying with these kids.
The way he runs in one of Tina's dreams, it's almost like she's like legit running away and he's like got this widespread squat stance. He's like, come on. Yeah. And he's like running after her and he looks silly, but it's almost like he doesn't just want to kill them. He wants to play with them. And that's what's sadistic.
That's the creepy part about it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, come out. I'm your daddy. Like, come out wherever you are. Mm-hmm. Like something like that. And when there's a scene in one of Tina's dreams to where he just looks at her and she's got this terrified look on his face. And he takes his claw and just cuts off a couple of his fingers and just kind of looks at her like, huh? Yeah. And it's like green goo kind of flying out of it. So that's what separates Freddy too. Mm-hmm. It's not just some, and Robert Englund is to credit a lot of that.
He's so good in this movie.
Oh, he's excellent, and he's also very intentional with a lot of his movements. He's like I had a wide stance, like a Jimmy Cagney. The glove was very heavy, so I leaned to one side.
He's kind of like a gunslinger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that's what also separates Freddy is that it's not just about, gotcha, you're dead. It's, I want to play that. I get off on that. Yeah.
See, so
thing.
Maybe endearing was the wrong word. I wouldn't want to have a beer with this guy.
Well, exactly. Maybe in later movies.
he becomes popular. Like, I came to see Freddy.
Yeah. Are you ready to die? It's like, actually, I went to sleep on purpose. I kind of want to have a beer with you. Kind of want to have a little heart to heart, Fred.
Yeah.
Fred, can I call you Fred?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. But there's kind of with what Nancy sets up all these booby traps, it's the inventiveness.
Yeah.
Of like,
she sets them up really quick too.
Right. But it's like it all comes from an actual book that Wes Craven read. So all of those booby traps she sets up are like real.
Mm-hmm.
And you had mentioned, I think it was before we started. I think as we were getting into recording, you had mentioned how it's actually there's some unintentionally funny things happen to Freddy as the booby traps are going off.
For sure. And just there's just funny parts in general about this movie. I think that there's some funny acting moments where like laugh out loud kind of bad. But I don't mind that.
Yeah, sure, I love it. Yeah.
And I think that we're in an age where we watch movies critically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone's got a YouTube channel.
But like at the end of the day, a movie is for entertainment.
Exactly. Right?
It's something you can lose yourself in. And I like that this movie is kind of, it's a dream within a dream.
Right.
Right. So reality is kind of this fluid sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you guys feel about
that? I think with that idea, how reality is fluid, it's cool how when they go from reality to a dream sequence, you can tell they're kind of going into, they're staying in reality, and then there's this one flip.
Great editing.
To where now you're in a dream world, to where, let's say, Nancy, when she falls asleep in English class, like, you see the class around her, and the kid gets up and starts reading Shakespeare.
Right.
Yeah. And you see Nancy fall asleep, but then you see there's not some like, you know, like, there's not some smash cut. There's not anything like that. But like, the kid is still reading, but he's kind of like
monotone.
He's monotone. His voice dies out, and like everything is still the same. But then you hear this like Nancy, and you look, and she looks, and all there's Tina in a body bag.
Yeah,
and you're like, okay, Tina's dead. Something's up. And then now she looks up, and the guy is like in a stage whisper, like you know, talking about dreams. And then Nancy gets up, and she's walking through, sees the hall monitor, and is like, it's just a hall monitor. But then Freddie's voice comes out, and then finally she finds herself in a boiler room. Now we're in the dreamscape. Yeah. So the way that they kind of, like you said, the fluidity of how they keep you grounded, then you let your defenses down, and then boom, you're in a surreal area to where now you're in that experience with them, and now that kind of heightens the fear. Yeah.
You almost reach a point, like, just speaking to that scene specifically, when Nancy's in the boiler room, you're so engrossed that you don't even realize until she like burns herself and just wakes up thrashing around in class. You're like, oh shit, that was a dream. I mean, you're supposed to know, oh, it's Freddy, it's a dream. But in your head, you're like, wait. It gets to a point where you're like, what's a dream? What's reality? Especially in the last fight.
Yeah.
When she like busts through like the window and she lands on the latticing and she jumps on Freddy, and then it cuts to her in her bed with latticing on her from outside, and she's like thrashing around like, oh wait, no. And then she's yelling, she's like, go get my dad. And he's like, everything's gonna be all right. She's like, no, get my dad. And you're like, wait, is this, what's real? And then like, has she pulled Freddy out yet? It's like, Steve, just the way it's edited. Just when you're like, okay, we're here, we know they're gonna start dreaming because someone has to fall asleep, and then she's asleep, and it's just you're in class, and you expect something like, this is a dream, like fog, you know, and it's just
like to jump through the window or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly, like, it fluid is a perfect way to describe it. It's subtle. Yeah. It gets to a point to where you as an audience are so in to everything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what's real, what's not. And I just think that's so brilliantly done.
Oh, for sure.
And it's crazy, like, that something like this, you watch and you're like, I cannot believe, like, guy at New Line Cinema.
Oh, Robert Shea.
Peter Jackson.
Yes. Yeah. Well, back to Lord of the Rings.
He made them a lot of dinero.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, New Line Cinema is really the house that Freddie built, because this was the first movie that really made them any money.
Really?
Yeah. And Robert Shea was like mortgaged his house and stuff. At first, it was just a film distribution company, and they just like bought copyrights and stuff. And then Robert Shea was like, I'm not in it for the money. I want to make movies. And so
Wes Craven had this movie that actually Disney wanted to do. Disney wanted to do this, but they're like, there's a lot. You need a cut.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm not coming here.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you make a PG version?
That's what they wanted.
I can't.
I was like, what is this, like Bride of Boogity? Like, what,
yeah,
like
exactly.
Disney did.
Can we get Tim Curry? It's like, I mean, yeah, but it's not my vision.
Yeah.
So
he took it to Robert Shea at New Line.
Yeah, he took it to Robert Shea at New Line, and that's how they made it. So really, after this, it exploded, and it's crazy to watch these movies in the success they've had and how iconic they are, and they start these gigantic franchises, and you sit there and like, I cannot believe that there were people that didn't have faith in this. Like, this is so great.
It's groundbreaking too.
Exactly, super groundbreaking. So it's just the idea of where are you most vulnerable, or in your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you think you're asleep and you're like, no one can get me in my dreams, this guy only gets you in your dreams. And so now all you just don't go to sleep. It's like, but I need to sleep. And it's just, do you know?
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, do you know the story behind where Wes Craven was influenced?
No.
By this? So he was, there was, I can't remember, there was in China or Japan, I think. There was a story of this guy that just kept having these nightmares, and he refused to go to sleep. Because he's like, if I go to sleep, I'm going to die. And so his dad was a physician, and he just like takes sleeping pills. And so he kept giving him sleeping pills, and eventually like he had this night, he was just
he fell asleep.
He was in the middle of a nightmare, and he died. And they go in, and he had like a Mr. Coffee, and all the sleeping pills were like under his bed because he wasn't taking them. And so what was really probably some sort of exhaustion and some sort of stress on his heart and stuff like that, just the idea that someone can, you can die, someone can get you through a dream or a nightmare, get you in your sleep. That teamed with this guy that Wes Craven said when he was a kid, he would look outside and there was like this drifter that he saw just standing right in front of his house. And the drifter, and he kind of looked down, and the drifter almost felt like someone was looking at him. So he like looked up at Wes Craven and kind of gave him like this grin, like he almost took joy in scaring this child. So those two things is how we got.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to drive home after this. Yeah, just so that's where it kind of stemmed from. So what were you going to say? Sorry.
I was going to say, you know, a horror movie is good by the feeling you get when you're walking out of the theater.
Right?
Or like when you go to fall asleep at night, if you're still thinking about it. You know, if you're thinking about a movie two or three days later, that's a good
movie. It was good.
It was effective. Whether or not some person on Rotten Tomatoes like tries to get you to think it wasn't good, it's the experience and it's that stuff, the intangibles, to where you're
that's
like,
the thing.
It was good to me, though.
I want to hear from the people that saw it. I don't want to hear from someone whose brain is tuned to just criticize. I want to hear from the people who were in the theaters or at home, like, the visceral feelings that they got. That's the audience score. That's what I'm paying attention to.
Now, you mentioned the coffee under the bed. That was one moment where I did laugh out loud because it seemed a bit ridiculous. But she's got the Mr. Coffee brewing under the bed. And that her mom is in there, but she can't smell the coffee.
It's like, wake up and smell the coffee, mom. But she's so out of it. So
she's wasted. She's loaded all the time, right?
Do
you think she's loaded all the time because of the Freddy thing?
I think there's, so,
I think it's a lot of this kind of because that with the mom, it's a slow progression too. As you see more and more, as you see the mom, she is some sort of like, she's surreptitiously drinking, and then now she's just drinking out in the open because it's this guilt that's now coming up, because now she's coming to the whole sins of the father and mother
it's
thing.
It's all coming back.
It's all coming back because now you know, kids are suffering and kids are dying, and like you know it, like your daughter is bringing up this name you tried to forget, and now you're starting to connect the dots and you're like, this could be my fault.
She's dismissive as a defense.
Yeah,
I mean, she's not like just dismissive as a person, like oh, it's fine, just go sleep, you know. She Nancy brings up these like these triggers and these like red flags, and she's like, you can see in her face she knows what she's talking about, but she can't lead on anything. So almost she almost in a way gaslights Nancy. Like, it's like, oh, you just need to get sleep. It's like, you're just you know, that you're just imagining things kind of thing. But she knows.
She knows.
It's like, oh shit, this has to do with that Fred Krueger guy. And I might have something to do with all
One of my favorite tropes in horror movies is when you get that origin story, like that 5 to 10 minute section of the movie where they're like, it's probably like halfway through
or
three quarters of the way through where they're like, this is what happened.
I've been meaning to tell you this for a long time.
And you're not my son. And Nancy's pissed. Nancy's like, you could have like said something earlier.
Everyone thinks I'm crazy. I think I'm crazy. At the end, when she wakes up and she thinks like she does, like she wanted to bring Freddy into the real world and he's not there, and she's like, maybe I am crazy. She's like, God, or she's like, God damn it, I am crazy. And then he pops up. Like, everyone's making her think she's crazy.
Yeah.
But like, but the thing is, like, it's so, it leaves you constantly tense because you're like, you're putting yourself in their shoes and you're like, everyone knows that something physically, like in the real world, isn't, it's there's something happening. They don't know how to explain it. But like when Johnny Depp dies, like,
RIP,
JD.
This was 30 years before Amber Heard.
Yeah, exactly. What did she hear?
That nightmare.
Oh, yes.
She
defecated
on my bed.
She took a shit on my bed.
Because he's got an accent now for God
some
knows
reason.
What.
Yeah.
For God knows what.
Different
reason.
Kind of nightmare.
Yeah.
but But it's this tension because, like, the adults know something is going on, but they can't acknowledge it. And Nancy...
Yeah, it's like a repressed sort of trauma. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. Nancy is connecting. She's like, I'm not crazy. Like, there's something going on. Rod was like... Yeah. Like, she's trying to figure... Because Rod... Because... And we'll talk about... We'll kind of dive more into the effects and why the deaths were so effective. What'd you say?
Rod.
Richard Gere type Rod. Yeah. Leather jacket.
He's in the music.
Yeah, he's in the music. So you know he's bad news.
Yeah.
Probably does drugs.
Exactly. Then you look at the funeral. Drugs. His dad looks like he's an Elvis impersonator. Yeah. It's like, I see where he gets it from. Yeah. But, like, there's this, like, frustration because you're like, why don't you get it? Because, like... I mean, it's almost like a dramatic irony. Like, we as an audience know, but obviously, and there. But it's almost like, if I were in that shoes, how would I even explain that? You could tell Rod just feels so helpless. He's like, I didn't even touch her. I didn't kill her. Like, I can't explain it. Like, I saw her getting cut up, but there was nobody there. Like, I couldn't do anything to save her. And like, Nancy isn't straight. She's not saying, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
She's like, what? But if... Was it too dark? You can see. He's like, I didn't see any. But so, like, you're sitting there, and there's this, like, frantic energy throughout the movie, and you're like, nobody is on the same page. Everybody knows, but everybody's like refusing to be on the same page, and they have Nancy who's in the middle of it, who just thinks she's crazy.
Right. No one wants to say it out loud.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So immediately, whenever that murder happens, the very first one, and Rod gets framed.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a second. I've seen this before.
Right.
Recently.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert.
Yes.
Have you guys seen the most recent season of Stranger Things?
No,
not yet. Okay. I haven't. I liked the first two seasons. When season three came out, I was kind of taking a break from it. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't even watched three or four.
I'll say this. But, season four is way more horror genre.
That's what I've heard.
It plays off of a lot of the stuff in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
And it's Robert Englund, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
He actually has a cameo in Stranger Things season 4. That's all I'm going to say about
it.
But I was like, oh, yeah. Like, this is a very similar story.
The influence still lives on. Yeah. Tyler, you mentioned the element of kind of weaving in this idea of suppressed trauma, things that are a little more cerebral that you have to think about.
Yeah.
That wasn't commonplace. And slashers. It was just all about body counts and TNA. Exactly.
Yeah.
So could you pick up on that? I mean, you picked up on the suppressed trauma, but could you pick up on any other, like, cerebral elements?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. So I was, it was 11 o'clock last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I need to watch Nightmare before we do this podcast.
Sure, sure.
And I was like, do I want to do this in an altered state? Of course. And the answer is yes. Of course.
Yeah.
So I took an edible.
Okay.
And I'm watching Nightmare on Elm Street, and there's a lot of those things that stick out, which, I mean, I'll say this. Watching horror movies after smoking weed is one of my favorite
things. Yeah?
Hey, there you go.
That's how I watched the Never Sleep Again. Took a couple edibles, and I was just sitting there, and I was like, damn, this is good.
It's nice. And I feel like I have some insights sometimes.
Yes, of course. Sure.
But that was one of them. I'm like, oh, this is a movie about repressed trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And really having to face whatever it is that's going on.
Yeah.
Which is what Nancy has to do towards the end, right?
Yeah.
She finally has to face Freddy because she's on the defensive end the whole movie.
Right.
And then at the end, she realizes, no, I have to go in and I have to take action.
Yeah.
I have to stare him in the face.
Yeah.
And tell him what an ugly motherfucker he is.
Yeah, exactly. And
pull him out.
Yeah.
I have to
take the power away from him.
Yeah.
Exactly. And she's like, the line that sticks out to me is like, I take back every bit of energy that I gave you. That's emblematic of fear itself.
Right.
Like, when you finally decide, fuck this, I need to face this fear, you kind of look it in the face and you're like, I take back all the power I gave you, all the energy I gave you.
Yeah.
Stand down. And that's ultimately what, quote unquote, defeated Freddy in this iteration.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got the ending, some shoehorned ending.
I have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as I don't know if you picked up on this either. And this actually, I didn't pick up on this until I kind of watched a couple reviews on it. And they made kind of this pretty clear, is if you notice people like Tina and obviously, you know, Rod, and there are situations to where teenagers that come from a broken home, mm-hmm. being a teenager, being hormonal and going through this thing you can't explain, there's a certain high level of anxiety there.
Sure.
So it makes you more vulnerable in a dream state. And when you're already vulnerable in your dreams.
Mm. And it was commonplace to just, and people still do it now. When kids bring up concerns, they dismiss it. And then they wonder why kids grow up with neglect issues, emotional neglect, trauma, that kind of stuff. So it's easy, even just them by virtue of being teenagers, it's like, it's hormones and stuff. Like, they're just, they don't know what they're talking
about. Yeah, they're just going through something.
Yeah, exactly.
Going through a phase. You know?
Exactly. Everything is a phase. Rather than trying to understand what it is, it's just writing it off as, they'll grow out of it kind of thing.
Well, I think a lot of the movie deals with that too, right? Because everyone, if you think about it, is living their own reality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that this movie kind of points to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To the fact that your fears are your, like, you've built your fears.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Whatever you're afraid of is an invention of your own mind.
You've kind of sabotaged yourself in a way.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's been influenced by maybe outside events or your past or whatever. But at the end of the day, it lives within you.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you have the power. You can only fix yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
For sure.
We'll get to the ending first. The deaths were super effective because
They're upsetting, too. Super upsetting
because of how convincing
the
people dying sold it.
Yeah,
or the aftermath of Johnny Depp's death. The aftermath for just minutes after that was brutal.
Yeah, we spend time with these teenagers. They're not just nameless, generic white teenagers in the suburbs that it's like, well, you're only here to get killed.
Sure.
Like, we actually spend time with them. You, as a teenager in the 80s especially, you're probably watching that and you're like, I know like three people like that. I see them in the halls at high school.
They're
like,
not
every
just
day.
Nameless, faceless. Yeah. They're actual, one of the strong points of it is their interactions kind of come off as like stuff teenagers would do.
Almost innocuous. Sure. Mm-hmm. But that's like what makes it effective is that you relate to that. And that's why it's unsettling, not just in the ways that they die, but Tina, when in that incredible effect we were talking about where the room rotates, which they have also used for Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Yes.
It's a little piece of trivia there. So two landmark films.
Yes.
And
which Freddy Krueger would have showed up in that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Inception, too.
Exactly.
The rotating room.
Yes. There you go. Christopher Nolan was on to something.
He was.
I was a big fan of Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. You know, this is also used in Nightmare on Elm Street. What's that?
It's too, didn't watch it. Too scary.
I didn't watch it. Too scary. It's unsettling because it's not just like blink and you miss it.
Mm-hmm.
They stick on it for a long time. Rod is off the side, helpless. Tina, yeah. And she is just blood curdling scream as she's dragged across the ceiling.
Yeah, and the acting in those particular scenes is phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
It's so upsetting to watch someone scream.
Yeah.
And then they just don't cut. They just keep rolling.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Oh, man.
You're just like, I don't want to watch this. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm watching this person. I can't watch people suffer, like kind of thing.
Now, you mentioned, I don't know if this was a slight on anything else in regards to acting-wise. You said the acting in there was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I do agree, if this is where you're going, how some of the acting leaves a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, I think it's more of a style. It's just stylistic.
Yeah, sure.
And if you watch enough of the genre, you understand, like, oh, this is kind of what this is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's bad in the sense of like not entertaining.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I just think that there's a few moments where you're like, oh, you're acting. Like this.
Oh, this is very. You are theater kidding right now.
Sure. Yeah.
Like
sure.
You are acting to the back of the theater right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny that, like, and granted, this was like his first movie, but ironically enough, the most flat acting and flat character in this movie is Johnny Depp.
Hey, he's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But which is why it's great.
He's so natural.
Exactly. And he's supposed to be like the jock. And he's like, well, come knock your lights out, whoever's out there. And he's like, come on. And it's another kind of bit of trivia. Wes Craven, when he was casting this movie, you had kind of your typical 80s cohort that came in to audition, mm-hmm. like I think Charlie Sheen and yeah. like some other people. And there's a specific image he had in mind.
Sure.
And Johnny Depp, I think he was there with Jackie Earle Haley.
Yeah.
Who ended up playing Freddy yeah. in the remake.
He was there with somebody else because yeah. he was in a band. So right, right, right. About
and so he was there. He's like at the audition. And they're like, what about him? And he goes and auditions. And his Wes Craven's daughter's like, Dad, you have to pick him. It's like, really? He's kind of
sickly.
He's kind of sickly looking. He's like, he's beautiful. And he's like, that's when I knew I had to pick him. Because my daughter's like, he's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so neat little piece yeah. of trivia.
But I think I like it, though, because
he almost happened into it.
Yeah, yeah, because a lot of the time, teenagers and stuff like this are treated like they're disposable. Mm. Like they're just angsty. They're right. You'd be dismissive of their feelings. But this really gave depth and consideration yeah. to how these teenagers are feeling.
Yeah.
You know, what are they going through? They have this shared experience that they all feel like they're on their own island. Even Glenn doesn't believe it, but he still yeah. is like, yeah, whatever, dude with claws, you know, I slept like a rock, whatever.
Yeah, it almost seems like he doesn't have dreams. Like, wouldn't know. Don't have any yeah. dreams.
Yeah. Until it's too late. And
part of my prefrontal cortex never developed.
Yeah. But it's just, it's something to where, I mean, I find myself kind of being a little bit dismissive of teenagers sometimes because sure. I think I'm reaching a point to where I can't relate to what teenagers go through sure. anymore. But it's important to show representation of teenagers being like strong characters yeah. and also yeah. just as a whole.
But you certainly also remember what it was like to be a teenager.
Of course, absolutely.
Of course,
you know, I'm going through hormones, going through these things, you know, people just saying teenagers being teenagers, but still going through things, you know, yeah. whether...
Dude, when you're a teenager and every day uh-huh. feels like the most important day of
oh,
your
yeah.
life.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Especially within the four walls of a church and what they're telling Jeez, you to yeah, do yeah. and how to live, how you should be as a teenager.
You're having to wrestle with everything you're already wrestling mm-hmm. with, and then, like, there's this shame, and you're like, how do... But I feel this way. They're telling me to feel this way. I don't know how to feel. Yeah. It's a lot to put on someone who's barely out of being a child.
A murderous yeah. madman who wants you had nothing to do with creating, coming yeah. to kill you in your dreams.
Yeah. We're back to the movie, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Let's tie it all yeah. in. Because yeah. because that's not something that's specific to just our teenage experience. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just teenage experience in general. Yeah. And generations before you are going to be dismissive of that yeah. because they're just too far gone from really relating oh, yeah. and understanding.
It's like you said, it's just teenagers being teenagers. Like, maybe we should listen to these teenagers as mm-hmm. they're being teenagers.
Oh, for sure.
Because, mm-hmm. quote, being teenagers, there's probably something to it. Mm-hmm. Like, rather than, it's getting to the phase, they'll grow out of it. They'll become a miserable adult just like me.
You've written know? Pretty much a whole album about that type of experience of, like, being a teenager and, like, what yeah. that's about and how it's important to, like,
yeah.
remember who you were then, what you did then, but also your growth now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tyler, yeah. like Johnny Depp, is also a musician.
Yes.
Yeah.
Musician.
Yes. yeah. Yes, music, art, and fart, and all that stuff.
I also use drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see,
yeah. yeah. Here, here, man.
So the ending, there is a twist in this, but it's one of the things to where, like, if you're not familiar with horror movies, you don't know about it. If you are familiar with horror movies, you kind of know about it. We're going to kind of spoil it here.
Yeah.
But the end, right after Nancy turns her back on Freddie, and Freddie yeah. kind of lunges at her, but then disappears. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scotty beams him up
yeah.
into the Enterprise. And
that is a similar effect.
Yes, yeah. I stole that yeah. joke from Dr. Wolfie on YouTube.
It's yes. yeah. A decent effect for whatever
yeah.
year it was.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And the next thing you see is it looks like she's going to be walking out of her room, but then it's a jump cut to her walking outside, and yeah. it's bright and outside.
Things are too
birds
perfect.
Are singing.
Exactly. Because yeah, exactly. she's like, give me back my friends. Give me back my mom. Mm-hmm. I yeah. want my MTV.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, listen, while I'm at it,
but like,
I
mom,
want a new bike.
Mom comes like, out, and she's like, "Yeah, I feel like $1 million. Don't want to drink anymore." It's like this is all like,
no.
this is all. She's conjuring this up in her head. Like this,
That's
she's
not
still
how
dreaming.
Work.
And then like her friends come up still alive, and then like, yeah. then like stuff starts going to shit, and mom gets mm-hmm. pulled through the door. But you said you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah. So I think this is what I believe is mm-hmm. the movie. As a narrative ends whenever she turns her back on Freddy.
Agreed. Mm-hmm.
And he disappears.
Yeah.
I think the quote unquote end is more of a tag. It's more of like having fun.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like an epilogue kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of having fun.
Right.
I don't think it necessarily is part of the narrative.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Like we're going to disorient you just one last time.
Yeah, like they could have rolled credits after I think he disappears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe she like turns around and has this sigh of relief. Like, oh, thank God.
Dreams by Van Halen starts playing.
Yeah, yeah. Do, 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 do.
Yeah, exactly.
Power Rangers?
Hell yeah, exactly. Man. Yeah. Thank you, Power Rangers and fireworks.
Right.
Right, above her bed.
That song still sits with me because of when I was a kid and I heard it in Power Rangers.
That song pumps me up to this
day. Hell yeah, man.
But
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think that like you can see that as, oh, that very end part is just a tag.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. That's how I think.
No,
about
totally.
It.
Well, kind of like it's like an after credit scene, like how they used to be, how it's like, you know, this is just kind of a fun thing. Like if you watch all the way to the end after the credits of Heavyweights, it's just Tony Perkis like selling stuff door to door.
Yeah.
Nothing ever comes of that, but maybe it could have been something like that towards right at the very end. If you stick around, you see like it's bright outside. Nancy walks out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all this great stuff's happening, and then Freddie pulls her mom, or I guess a blow-up doll supposed to be her mom,
through the little
window.
I don't care what year it is. That's a bad effect. It's clearly a dummy.
That's also a laugh-out-loud.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. It's like, ugh. Can you imagine, like, it's tense, and you take it very seriously, and then it happens, and you're like, it's one of those things. Like I think Wes Craven just wanted to keep it as them driving away, quote unquote happy ending.
But there's a couple moments where he teases the red and green.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is with the girl in the hallway. She's wearing a sweater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
At the end, also with the car when the top comes up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, and it's red and green stripes, and you're like, oh no,
we're in a dream world.
And then Robert Shea's like, I got to set up for a sequel. And Wes Craven's like, sequel? I told my story.
Yeah.
And then Nightmare 2 is awful.
Yeah.
And
Friday the 13th, Sean S. Cunningham, same things. Like, I told my story. John Carpenter, I told my story. But
yeah, exactly.
Just, this stuff makes money. Like, there's a reason it makes money. And that's kind of what the culture was in the late 70s and the 80s, that these movies made money. So,
I will say, though, Scream 2. Scream 2 is not bad.
Scream 2?
Oh, yeah.
I like Scream 2.
And you know, Nev Campbell is definitely Sidney Prescott.
You had me at Nev Campbell.
Yeah, I know.
That's all you got to say.
Yeah,
Sidney
exactly.
Prescott is a stronger, more capable heroine in that one.
Wes Craven implements a lot of the same things he did for like Nightmare in this. And so, it's I lost my train of thought.
Yeah. But essentially, coming back to your first experience with Nightmare and Elm Street, was it just because of the culture and kind of the legend behind it? You just were like, I got to watch this.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I had heard so much about these movies over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was, I think we watched Scream first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, and I like how self-aware it is.
Yeah, but it takes it seriously.
Yeah.
It does, which I think is something that you have to do. I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of art.
Yeah.
Whatever you're doing, you have to give like an earnest effort and a sincere effort.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the sense that even though Wes Craven is self-aware, he's making this movie about horror movies.
Yeah.
That it's also telling a story, and it's doing multiple things at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But that was the first one I watched a couple years ago, and I was like, this is really good.
Yeah.
This is really good. And then we had to watch
Nightmare
on Elm Street. And I wasn't disappointed. Here's what I like about it, too, is that it's so tight.
Yeah.
Yes.
I sat down to watch it at 11 o'clock last night, and I was like, man, how long is this movie?
Mm-hmm.
And so I pull up the runtime, and it's like 93 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like, perfect.
Yeah. But they tell their story. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was never bored.
Right.
In that 90 minutes. And
exactly.
I wish movies could be like that. That's a particular thing I do like about the genre of horror movies, is that they tend to be tight, and they tend to be in that 90 to 100 minute range.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what's great, there's all these little sub-genres inside of horror to where you can get whatever you crave. If you have this,
whatever you're craving.
If you have this bloodlust, so you just want gore, yeah, there's movies for that. If you want suspense thriller that you can still be scared by, you have that. You want self-aware stuff, you have that.
Yeah.
You want the classics, you have that. You have what, you know, our modern horror movies were inspired by and what those were inspired by. You have, it's all this tree
something
of
for everyone.
Stuff.
Yeah.
That's why we've said on the show, Tyler, that Matt and I wouldn't particularly call ourselves horror hounds, mm-hmm, but we're pop culture nerds.
Sure. Yeah.
So part of the pop culture zeitgeist is horror
movies,
especially
yeah,
80s and 90s horror. Mm-hmm. So when it got to the point where we were teenagers and really sinking our teeth into stuff, we were like, we gotta get into horror in some way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it started with AMC Fear Fest,
right,
and now voluntarily watching these making of documentaries or horror, you know, these horror videos from these, you know, YouTube commentators, and just being fascinated with the horror subculture and all the subcultures that tree off, mm-hmm, from that. Like you said, it's this fascination with this thing that started out as forbidden fruit, and now you're like, why do people love these so much? Mm-hmm. And you yourself start to love them, mm-hmm, through finding an appreciation.
Yeah. And it's like comedies too, to, mm-hmm, where, right, it's just as fun to watch a horror movie through the eyes of another.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like if you're watching a comedy with someone and you're like, oh, I wonder,
yes,
if they're gonna laugh at this point.
Yes.
Like, that's funny too.
It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, mm-hmm, then like with a horror movie, it's like when everyone recoils at the same time,
yeah,
from a jump scare, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone cool?
Yeah.
Everyone good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a shared experience. I saw It Chapter 2 in theaters.
Oh, yeah. The first one was excellent. I haven't seen the second one.
I think It Chapter 1,
yeah,
is my favorite horror movie.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Of all time.
Yeah.
But I was watching Chapter 2 in theaters, and I was next to this woman. Mm. Just a stranger.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, I remember that there was a jump scare, and we both freaked out at the same time.
That's awesome.
That's great.
And
yeah,
we both were just like, ah!
Yes.
And then, of course, you look at each other,
yeah,
and she was just like, Jesus.
That was scary.
Yeah, and you have this shared laugh.
Where'd you come from?
Yeah,
exactly.
But it's like, it's great because with like any convention, horror conventions are the most popular because you're meeting all these like-minded,
yeah,
people, and you all have a shared experience somehow, whether you had it together with the people you're going with,
mm-hmm,
or you see people you know, or you all are here to talk to Robert Englund because you're,
mm-hmm,
all telling him about the experience you had,
yeah,
with his work. Or you're talking to Heather Langenkamp,
yeah,
like, you inspired me so much as a female or as a male or in any way, shape,
right,
or form. You all,
yeah,
have this collective experience,
yeah,
inside of not just horror, but since this is Halloween, we're talking horror.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the things that's always appealed to me and why I still am fascinated,
sure,
by something I still know just a little bit about. It's
right,
just so much fun to see that through other people's eyes.
For
exactly.
Sure.
That's why, yeah, I like going to concerts with people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's more important for me. It's like when – it's one of those things when I buy tickets for a bunch of people, it's more important – to me that you go, not necessarily that I get my money back,
mm-hmm,
kind of thing, because it's fun for me to stand there and watch other people,
yeah,
sing along to songs,
yeah,
or to watch them, like, this is corny, but rock out or like get into the,
yeah,
music and
see
and
how
stuff
they
like that.
Do it, what they,
yeah,
get into.
It's the same thing as like watching a movie, a,
mm-hmm,
comedy, a horror, whatever. You kind of like, what are you going to react? It's that excitement when you show someone a movie that,
mm-hmm,
they've never seen, but you've seen, kind,
mm-hmm,
of thing,
yeah,
as well.
Oh yeah. Man, I think we're gonna cap it off there. This was a blast. This was awesome, Tyler.
Great episode.
It's weird.
Not a nightmare.
Yes, we were so happy that you could join us.
Yes.
You are a busy man. We keep in touch. We love you. We love talking to you.
Yeah.
And this was a real treat for us. So I hope you had a good time.
Yeah, I had a great time.
Excellent.
Thanks for having,
awesome,
me, guys.
Yeah,
I could have gone for another hour.
Yeah.
I was gonna say. I was like, huh? This
like
is flying
like,
by. It's like, I feel like there's still more
like
to
where
talk
are we
about.
At? Because Wes Craven wrote a layered movie.
Yeah.
Even if somebody, you know, people who don't see it can like shrug it off,
yeah,
but it's a very well written,
yeah,
I use the word cerebral movie,
mm-hmm,
which you find new stuff about it. And as,
right,
you learn more about it, you see it and you're like, that's great. That's awesome, especially for something that people turn their nose up, like a slasher movie.
Yep, sure.
It's a great movie that turned the tide with the slasher, inspired a lot of copycats, but also created kind of the framework for the screams like that, which was also greatly appreciated at the time. Great movie. Great friends.
Great episode.
A great time. Tyler, again, thank you.
Thank you,
sir. We cannot wait to have you on again. I don't know what we'll talk about, but it'll be...
Doesn't matter.
It'll be a great time.
Yeah. Looking forward to it, guys.
I know it. Yeah, and for all of you out there, thank you again for joining us this week for the Radcast Halloween. And until the next time,
boo good to yourselves and boo good to others. Because why would you want to be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.